Hello and welcome to CKCU 93.1 FM, Ottawa's Queer Media, and we're kicking it at the Capitol. And you're listening to the Velvet Studio, as I mentioned, Ottawa's Queer Media. I totally got that the wrong way round. And I have a fantastic, truly fantastic group of guests here today. I have RJ and Vincent. Would you two like to introduce yourselves?
Sure. My name's RJ Pate. I'm the co-founder of the Black Lives Matter Ottawa Coalition, the one of two Black Lives Matter chapters currently in Canada. And I know I'm just a local activist dealing with, you know, the racial oppression that's here in our state of Canada and, you know, bringing those correlations between Canada and the U.S.
Hi, my name is Vincent. I'm a campaigns organizer for the Student Federation of the University of Ottawa, Local 41 of the Canadian Federation of Students. And I'm just also a local activist, pretty involved with Black Lives Matter and a couple of other local organizations.
And today we're talking about the depoliticization of Pride, and we're expecting Tammy Dobson to join us at any moment. And we will also have on the line Matt Barker, who we're hoping to connect with any second. How is this, Matt? Awesome. I'm going to try and connect you now. Let's see if this works.
Sorry?
Oh, there we go. Excellent. So can you hear me?
There we go. Yeah, I can hear you.
Awesome sauce. So let's do that. So we have Matt on the line. Would you like to introduce yourselves?
My name is Matt Barker. I work for a new publication called EQ. And I'm considered, I guess, a media activist in a sense, where I create content for the purpose of awareness and human rights. And I just finished a documentary, came out 2 weeks ago, and it's called Blood, Sweat, and Queers.
And we'll be getting into that in just a few minutes as we explore the topic of whether or not, and if so, how so, Pride has become depoliticized within Canada. Now, to provide some context, we reached out to an activist, Elizabeth Coleman, who is in Istanbul in Turkey. And Elizabeth managed to send us a statement regarding kind of how Pride went down in Istanbul. Now, some of you may be familiar with kind of what happened there. So I'll read her statement to folks just to kind of get an idea of what's happening elsewhere in the world. She begins with, "Let me begin by saying that I'm sorry I cannot speak with you directly. Additionally, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to explain to your listeners a little of what we face here in Istanbul." She arrived late to the Pride March around 5:30 p.m. There was no point in rushing, as the march tends to take 2 hours to get from Taksim to Tunnel. When my partner and I arrived at Taksim Square, emerging from the metro, we could see a large number of riot police. This is nothing new, and so we were not worried. We looked to the side to see where the group of Pride participants were being held, and at this point, I assume they had decided not to let the marchers across the square. This is now a standard policy applied to any march along Istiklal Avenue, and not an immediate cause for worry. We decided to walk along an alternative route through the back streets to reach Tunnel. Unfortunately, we soon saw that this route was blocked and turned back towards the square. At this time, the police arrived and activated a water cannon against the people in the street. We ran to a small corner shop for cover and sheltered there until it ceased. From there, we stood in a coffee shop at the edge of the square, which was full of activists and participants, while we planned our next move. We decided it was best to take the metro to the next stop, which was adjacent to Tunnel. When we got there, a number of marchers had been able to reach there and were enjoying the atmosphere, which at that time was quiet. However, feeling uneasy about the whole thing, we moved further away to Galata Tower, where people often gather after the march. In this area, we didn't meet any violence. Later, after 11-ish, as we returned along Istiklal Avenue, we were passed by a group of riot police running full pelt towards Tunnel. Social media reports show that the gassing was still going on in some areas, even at midnight. I was lucky. The worst I encountered that day was a water cannon. It's fair to say that no one was expecting Pride to turn out like this. We were not expecting a last-minute ban or the unprovoked violence. There was a mass feeling of shock and confusion at the time. There has been a police presence at Pride before, but the marches have been peaceful. 2 years ago, the march fell directly after the occupation of Gezi Park and mass social unrest. During the preceding months, the police had deployed water cannons, tear gas, and violence against protesters and those caught in the crossfire. Yet, surprisingly, there were no incidents during the march that year. Last year, it was similar. Far too many police ready to act, but doing nothing. All of the past 12 marches have passed without incident. The official reason for banning the march was Ramadan. This cannot be a real reason behind it. Last year, the march also fell during Ramadan. It was not a problem, and we had no trouble at all. In fact, the ruling party, AKP, who also control the municipality where the march takes place, referred to last year's Pride in their election materials as an example of tolerance. A quote from their brochure reads, "Turkey is a country that can hold a gay pride on Istiklal Avenue even in the middle of the month of Ramadan. The increased visibility of conservative people does not carry the meaning that there is an intervention to people's lifestyles." Regardless of the incidents of Ramadan, the Pride Weekend march happen on the same days every year. We always march on the final Sunday of June. This fact is widely known, and the authorities could have raised objections earlier. The tactic of banning the march of those already gathered is, let me call it, sneaky. It feels like entrapment. A lot of us believe that the ban was connected to the recent elections. The Republican People's Party and the People's Democratic Party did well, and it was the first election in which the HDP could gain parliamentary seats. This means Erdogan and the ruling AKP are losing power and they do not feel secure. There are a lot of reasons why holding on to power is so important to Erdogan, although this is another conversation entirely. And we have previously seen that any attempts to oust him or question his actions have been met with violence. It's also significant that MPs from the CHP and HDP marched with us, and that prior to the march, CHP-controlled municipalities displayed rainbows on their social media accounts with good wishes. It's important to have political support here. Although homosexuality isn't illegal here, we have no constitutional protection regarding non-discrimination, and an equivalent of gay panic defence can dramatically reduce the sentence for anyone charged with violence against an LGBTI person. Although the constitution was recently reformed, proposals to include LGBTI people were rejected. MPs from these parties can be an ally in pushing for recognition for our rights. It's because simple rights, such as the right to employment or even life, are violated so frequently that pride is political here. Activism is a daily occurrence. Being out here is an action. While a lot of the community campaigns tirelessly all year round, Pride is a chance for those who cannot be out to join in and be lost in the crowd, and for allies to show their support. While we're still fighting for our rights, there is no room for the commercialization that is seen in a lot of Pride parades. I think that's an important difference. Marching in Turkey is defiant. It is a proud declaration that we're everywhere and we're not going anywhere. Pride here is usually peaceful. I'd like to see that return next year. The first Pride was a riot, but we have enough violence here. Those who want to march are peaceful, but they have the spirit of resistance. If they are attacked, they will not back down. We really aren't going anywhere. Since the day of the march, 68 individuals and 4 LGBTI organizations have filed criminal complaints against the authorities involved that day. The applications name the Interior Minister, the Governor of Istanbul, the Istanbul Police Chief, and the police officers involved in the ground that day. Petitions cover, but are not limited to, violence, bodily harm, torture, offences against freedom, and misconduct in office. There is a pessimism regarding the outcome of these applications. Trials here are often not in our favour, and there is hope that petitions filed with the European Court of Human Rights will make better progress. There has always been violence towards the LGBT community since the march. In Ankara, posters have been put up by a conservative group declaring, "If you see someone engaged in the dirty business of the tribe of Lot, kill the doer and the don both." Unfortunately, this call has been acted upon, and an activist has already been attacked in their own home. The prosecutors, they know they'll get away with their actions. The perpetrators know they will get away with their actions and stated so in front of police officers, who later informed the victim that they had not been raped. When we consider these actions, along with the attacks in Istanbul and cyber attacks against LGBTI organization websites, it seems safe to say that we are in store for some dark days. Those who would like to keep up to date on LGBTI issues in Turkey might like to visit the website lgbtinewsturkey.com, where news reports are translated from Turkish into English with the hope of reaching a global audience. I'd like to thank Elizabeth Coleman for taking the time to put her thoughts to paper and sharing that that experience with us. It was very important that we hear that. What do you two think of that?
I think the wording is really key on that. Stating that, you know, it really is a march happening in Istanbul and not a parade that is happening in these first world countries and where our privileges are much higher in our LGBTQ, you know, I+ communities, where they are having still marches, like it isn't a parade. They don't have the ability just to have a parade. They need to march for their rights and march for what's important to them. So I think, you know, her wording in that statement was quite amazing, and that's really something that we should, you know, keep an eye on.
Excellent. Now, we have been joined by Tammy Dobson. How are you doing?
I'm fine, and I was lost up until about 5 minutes ago.
It's not an easy campus to navigate, that's for sure. Yeah. Tammy, do you want to quickly introduce yourself?
Tammy Dobson, Chair of Capital Pride for 2015.
Excellent. And Capital Pride is referring here to the Pride in Ottawa City. For those folks who are listening to us outside of Ottawa, one of whom is Matt Barker with Inquiry, which is a GLBT multimedia group. Now, recently we heard, I had the pleasure of watching the Blood, Sweat and Queers documentary that you'd made. Kind of what was the impetus behind that?
Honestly, it started with wanting to understand the real story behind Pride. I think my generation in particular sees Pride as a party. And for me, I needed to show the real story. I needed to show the full piece. And when we started production last year during World Pride, we just wanted to know how it started. And then as we kept looking around and meeting these people, we started to realize that we're maybe using pride in the wrong way. Whereas pride should maybe necessarily considered as a vehicle of change. And 2 million people, like it's a lot of people. And just listening to that letter, I mean, there's so much work that needs to be done. You know, and that's why we produce Blood, Sweat, and Queers, because we wanted to show the hard work. We wanted to show like the literal blood of, you know, pride in a sense, and try to unify everyone and to say, look at this, look around us, you know, open your eyes. But the sad thing, I guess, about Blood, Sweat, and Queers is that during this year's experience, we launched the doc the same day that the U.S. Approved safe-sex marriage, and I just, like, everywhere I looked, it just reminded me that Blood, Sweat, and Queers needed to be out there more, the message. And everywhere I looked, it was a constant reminder that we had work to do, just from people's perspective of Pride itself, what they were doing.
One of the things that I thought was interesting that really, I mean, a few things from the documentary stuck with me when I was watching it. And for those interested in kind of seeing that, I believe you can find it on Vimeo. And I believe
Vimeo, yep.
Do you have a website as well where they can find that?
Yeah, nquery.com.
Excellent. And it's definitely worth, I think it's only about 13 minutes, but it's worth absolutely every second. One thing that really struck me, and I will disclose that last year I was the vice chair of Capital Pride for a time here in Ottawa as well. One thing that struck me was during the documentary, somebody says that, you know, the Pride Festival has turned almost into a rolling advertisement with one float after another. And, you know, having overseen, helped to oversee Pride last year, I mean, it's definitely possible to see that happening in lots of places. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that there's some social responsibility that corporations should take if they're going to be a part of Pride. Like, there needs to be some sort of legislation that proves that X brand is actually doing something for the community rather than just slapping their logo on a rainbow. And, I mean, Pride not only is sold, but so is Church Street in Toronto, for instance. All I'm really saying is we don't need everything to be political. Mm-hmm. We don't need everything to be, non-corporate. But it's more about where's the conversation and where does that brand fit in and what can we do right now? Because even in our own community, we are not together. We are in separate silos. You know, gay men do not attend the Dyke March. Okay, that's fine. But the lack of participation even this past year during the Trans March was astonishing. And even and not even on a political sense, the AIDS vigil, I was surprised that there was no one there that I knew that was positive as well,
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, the Human Rights Conference that was in Toronto this past year, it missed everyone. I don't understand how there wasn't a lineup down the road for that,
Now,
the people that were on the panel were, so well-spoken, and the things I learned were so beautiful. And with BSQ, what I'm trying to say is let's go that way again, but let's do so in a celebratory state.
I think the sense of celebration was really persistent in your messaging. We were actually speaking about the documentary on the way here, RJ and Vincent and myself. And RJ, I think you brought up a kind of a question regarding some of the crowd shots that were there.
Right. I was noticing that, most of the crowd shots were mainly white people. And in 2011, consensus for Toronto, it was about 50-50 for people of color living in Toronto and white people living in Toronto. And it's kind of an interesting dynamic to see that there are really only white representation in these streets in Toronto, and it's really a shame. Where are these 50% of people of color? Why aren't they participating, and why aren't they being included? Why aren't these people of color being at the front of, these marches? They're the ones that are being marginalized, specifically, in these systems to the most, the highest extents. So I think that was quite interesting.
Are you asking why there wasn't participation?
I'm wondering, what's your opinion on why, white people of color, weren't so much seen within, I guess, World Pride last year, and, not in the parade. It was really, most of the shots, honestly, were white people, and I'm really wondering, what's your opinion on that?
Well, I mean, in my experience, when it comes to diversity, I see the diversity. I may not see, I don't necessarily see specific color or the parade being a majority.
Okay.
But, there's a lot of families at Pride, right? A lot of white families who are just, and some of them, most of them actually are just allies, To them, it's a spectacle, And that's fine because that's gonna help with the educational, which community.
Sorry, do you want to jump in, Evan?
Yeah, I think more so what we were trying to get across is the fact that, it's not like so much a criticism of the documentary and focusing on white people per se.
Oh, okay.
But I think more so the issue was that the systemic issue of Pride being seen as an event that is planned for and by white cisgender middle class gay men, and that is very evident in the footage that you had took of the crowd shots, for example, and of the parade. And if you had any ideas more so about the inclusionary nature of Pride and how we can work to make sure that non-white people are better represented in Pride itself, not specifically in the documentary.
Right. I do feel that, especially with Kevin Bulu, who is the World Pride Executive Director, he was all about making a sound, diversified celebration. And I do have to congratulate him. He did do his best to make Pride something for everyone. But I would also say that the non maybe white male community can it step up, and that I don't see many people within the Black community, actually in any ethnicity community, any ethnic group, stepping up necessarily to create change. But I think that it almost transcends the topic of race, in a sense, where pride is the fight for human, regardless of race, regardless of sexual orientation or gender identity. And to me, if we see pride as a human mission, we don't have to worry about diversity, in a sense. It's just that we're all together for one.
I mean, I can definitely see where you're coming from there, and I think we have possibly a couple of guests who may not agree. If you have an opinion on this, this is out to our listeners. Send us a tweet at Velvet Studio One. Comment on our playlist, or get in touch with us through Facebook or through CKCU. We'd like to hear what you think of this very important discussion. In order for time, I'm going to move on to the next question, because I'm imagining we can loop back into this. Feel free to stay on the line, Matt, if you'd like.
Yeah, I'd love to.
Our first question is, has Pride become depoliticized? I'm going to start off with Tammy, because then we'll just kind of work our way around that way.
Pride becoming depoliticized. Okay, so let's identify Pride as a platform. And then Pride the organization, and then Pride the parade. Because, I'm only going to speak for Ottawa. I'm not going to speak for the global movement. I would say that I'm not the authority. In that I had been out of politics, if you will, for a very, very long time. And I was pulled out of mothball simply because of what happened with the current Pride organization and a desire to see it move forward for the 30th anniversary. So in Ottawa, there has been an accusation that we are not political enough. And again, I'm going to draw attention back to the three components of Pride in Ottawa, and that there's the global Pride movement, which is the platform for which we get together to celebrate, protest, educate, all of those things. And then there's Pride, the organization, which organizes the festival or the celebration, again, in protest and moment for education. So the organization, which is a brand new one that was composed, it started with a think tank, a focus group, and then it became a board as we moved towards a governance model. And then we created and hired the festival operations. So the board creates the policy, the oversight, the financial oversight, and then the operations are the ones that actually create the vision and execute the vision of Pride. Mm-hmm. But as a whole, the organization, what it does is creates an opportunity for people to speak of Pride in whatever way they see fit. So if that is a protest, then protest. If it's a moment to educate, you want to educate, then educate. If you want to celebrate, then celebrate. We're not dictating to you how you do it. What we are doing is creating a space. So at the board level, we are political in that we advocate for a space for the community as a whole, an opportunity. But each one of our members is political in their own right, but we do not politicize our meetings in that we don't sit there and advocate for our individual communities. We create a space for all of our communities. So in that sense, people think we're not political enough. But truthfully, if we all sat at the table and just advocated for our individual communities, we probably wouldn't get far. So all the people at the table, and I have some very fiercely political people, we advocate as a whole for the organization. For mm-hmm. individual communities, we take that moment within Pride, the celebration, education, and protest, and that's when we do it.
Do you want to touch on that, RJ? So the question was, has Pride been depoliticized? And Tammy actually broke that down into, Pride Inc., as in the organization, Pride as in the global movement, and then Pride as the parade itself. Do you think it's political?
I believe it was political. I live in Ottawa. It's no longer political. You're talking about the difference between celebrate, protest, and education, and all those three. All I'm seeing is the celebration, the education, the protesting. You're saying, those zones are there, those mediums to create that process is there. Where are we finding those? How can I find them? How can people in the community find them? Because they're not here. And why should we have to, you know, go to the board at Capitol Pride and be like, hey, we need this. Like, you guys should be able to see that, like, people aren't being represented, like, people of color aren't being represented properly, trans people, you know, homeless trans people, like, queers in this community aren't being represented. So I think, you know, a big portion of it is that all I'm seeing is, you know, the celebration part of this. And if these mediums exist, they're not being advertised, and they're not, you guys aren't trying hard enough to reach out to the community.
Do you want to go ahead?
Yeah. So I find it really interesting to say that Pride is this is a creator of community space where communities can all come together as one and live together. In reality, this is not the case. This hasn't been the case for numerous years. And I think to say this is very hypocritical, especially when Pride is like the Pride organization in Ottawa is being called out constantly based on trans representation, based on issues of representation of people of color, of bilingualism, which was actually a really interesting concern. And I think a lot of the arguments that I've heard when raising these criticisms to different folks at Capitol Pride was that, well, if you don't like it, you should come and change it. I mean, like, I'm going to be completely honest here. It's not my responsibility to run up and be like, hey, Massa, can we please have some rights, Massa? No. Like, I mean, Capitol Pride should be openly attempting to go and get support from different community members to actually truly become a representative organization. When we talk about what it is now, it is not.
I mean, this is a critique that is not just unique to Ottawa. I mean, I've spoken with Pride organizations across the country, and and people face these criticisms in lots of organizations that run the Pride festivals across Canada. And, you know, our listeners are also listening to this from across Canada, not just here in Ottawa. So it's important that we broaden the answers and the question. That really raises an interesting, there's two interesting options there. One, which is creating a platform for the communities to kind of step up and make use of. And the other one is proactively reaching out to the communities. I mean, these are two very different approaches. Does anybody want to
Luke,
comment
I'd like
that?
To comment to that, yeah. Because when we're reaching out, I can't think in recent memory of the last two prides that I was in before I was organizing, where they sat down in the middle of their organizational year and had a community consultation and created every venue for every opportunity for every community that needed to be represented. What we do is we hold a number of signature events to celebrate and to fundraise because it is required. But if somebody's not seen something they want, then there is an expectation that you should create. And truthfully, we can't do it all for you. We are 32 people. The community is probably, if you do the numbers and the demographics and percentages, is about 50,000 people. Last year at the parade, there was 110,000 people. We can't possibly do it all. And that's why we do ask people for help. And we were on social media. We advertised the jobs publicly. We went in newspapers. We went on television. We went on the radio. We were very present. However, the responses were usually people speaking to what they weren't seeing and to which we said the door is open. Truthfully speaking, we can only do so much. Somebody recently criticized this, Vincent, you would be one of them, on our Facebook page that we weren't bilingual. And another gentleman named Steve Cooper also said the same thing. And I said, you know what? We're doing our best. Our resources are limited. We are launching not only an entirely new organization, but a new festival and a lot of new programs to go with that. And 32 people can only do so much at once, as well as restructuring and rebuilding. So in that amount of time, when you're creating an organization and a festival side by side, we can't do it all. So when we ask people for help, it's because we need help. We're not asking so we can be railed at because it wasn't there in the first place. We admitted that launching the website without being fully bilingual was a mistake, but it was a result of limited resources and limited time. And we're still working towards that. Our press releases are always bilingual. Our Facebook page, we get the translations in there as fast as possible. Sometimes the French goes out before the English and the English before the French. But again, it's about resources. If we had the resources, everything would be perfect all the time.
Now, Matt.
I was actually going to jump it over
to you.
Yeah, like I think Pride organizations get a lot of criticism, but they really are doing a good job. And it's not necessarily their fault. There is lots of political, hoopla to go through. But like one thing that I was thinking, and a little bit about what BSQ is trying to say, is Pride is about the fight for humanity in a sense. Not, I don't believe anyways, a fight for a single race or a single, you know, orientation or identity. It's just, it really is, if we look at it as a vehicle to create change for humanity, then we cover everyone, regardless of if you're LGBTQRSTUV.
I want to move on to the next question here, which is, you know, what exists to be political?
I don't know. I think we need to let them speak. I see a lot of action going on over there.
All right, Jonah, go ahead.
This is absurd. This is absolutely absurd. First of all, my identity as a queer person does not exist independent of my identity as a black man or as a cisgendered person or as any other group that I might belong to. And to say that Pride is this movement that is like supposed to be, as you put it, supports like supporting the LGBTQRSTUV, let's talk about erasure, movement is extraordinarily offensive because my identities exist as a part of it. I mean, like, there's a reason why Blockorama in Toronto, for example, is mainly attended by black folks, and it's because we do not see ourselves represented in these festivals, and this is one of the only places in the year where we can actually be both queer, queer or trans, queer and or trans, and black, because these identities are often segmented. And what we're seeing is that when we say we want to celebrate the LGBTQ community, the exact image that comes into mind is white, cisgender, middle class males. And
I will
agree,
for sure.
This is the problem here,
right? You're definitely right about what comes to mind.
And I think one of the other things that I'd like to mention, just to go back to something that Tammy had said, was the idea of we can't do it all and we can't have all of these things. And that's a valid concern, right? I mean, like, as an organization, as organizations, prides are limited in what they can do, right? All that we're asking for is some sort of visibility and a recognition, I guess, of intersectionality. For example, Twin Cities Pride this year, their Grand Marshal was one of the organizers of Black Lives Matter, and they actually held a die-in at the beginning of this.
And it was an excellent demonstration. I agree. I saw the pictures. Awesome stuff.
Fantastic, yeah. Right? And I mean, that's what we're talking about when we're talking about solidarity, when we're talking about intersectionality. That's the kind of representation that we want to see. And when we essentially say that Pride is this global movement, we're essentially whitewashing the folks that are, well, I mean, whitewashing in our current society, because the majority of people are white and movements have been led by white people. We essentially see the erasure of the identities of people of color who have somehow to complement their, have to either like decide between their identity as a person of color and their identity as a queer person. And so, I mean, this is where I'm coming from with this, where it's like, I don't see myself represented in this organization. At the same time, I don't want to be like Uncle Tomming it up and being like, yeah, no, it's definitely, you need to do this. And this is what you need to, like, this is what you need to do and like go through it. I feel like as a person of color who's already going through all of this, all of these things, I don't have the time to do it, right? Like, I just want to have a festival that also represents me, right?
And I think you have so much passion that create action, you know, you can totally do that, right? It's a good thing about Pride is, in a sense, it can be molded by action and passion, but you just experienced. And I would totally, like, we should have this conversation in Toronto as well and see what we can do to make Pride even more diverse and feature people like, you know, Black Lives Matter and groups like that on a bigger level, not just a party or a stage, but make it more of an effort.
I think your comments really lend themselves to the question of, you know, what's left for Pride to be political about? I mean, you mentioned the Black Lives Matter protests and the fact that they were recognized as a Grand Marshal. Now, RJ, you've been involved with the chapter here in Ottawa. Is that something that, you know, Pride should become more active in?
Oh, of course. I mean, you know, black trans women are like the most targeted, you know, trans women, you know, in this continent. It's ridiculous.
With a 14% murder rate and a 40%